Good afternoon and welcome to the LaRouche Show. It's Saturday, September 29th, 2012. I'm Harley Schlanger and I will be your host. It is no exaggeration to say that most Americans have become pessimists. People are looking at the collapse, they're looking at the destruction of cities, the collapse of the educational system, high unemployment rates among youth, the debt crisis, the collapse of manufacturing. You look around the world and you see a similar picture. You see a buildup towards war led by this president and his British masters, ominously on the horizon in the Middle East. You look at the collapse of the Eurozone. And what you see is a decay in general in the world, a loss of a sense of mission for the human race, the collapse of morality, however you want to talk about it. And then you look at the options in the presidential race, the two supposed choices for president, Barack Obama, who on top of being a consistent liar, has done nothing to change course from the failed policies of the Bush 2 administration. And then you look at the opponent, Mitt Romney, and what can you say other than where did they dig this guy up from? So a lot of Americans are pessimistic, and you might say with good reason. However, events over the last days, which have been shaped by the imposition of reality and a relentless drive by LaRouche PAC, point to a different possibility. We're seeing the effects of the Obama policy rebound against him. The illegal, unconstitutional deployment in Libya led to the horrific events that took place in Benghazi, which then led to a cover-up of what actually happened. And now the cover-up is starting to break. So the question we're going to take up on today's LaRouche Show is, can we, with deliberate action, overturn what appears to be an inevitable decline and collapse of civilization? And in particular, can we, once and for all, remove Barack Obama from office? And avoid the train wreck of an Obama-Romney presidential campaign. Joining me on the show today is Nancy Spanis, the editor of EIR, and long before that, the editor of the what I can consider the newspaper of record from the 70s and 80s, New Solidarity. And I bring that up because when you talk about this question of Watergate, Nancy was there. Not that she's so old, because I was there also, but she was there editing a paper which carried the real story of what was actually going on in the removal of Richard Nixon. And I think there are some parallels, not that we can say there are things, history repeats itself exactly, but Nancy, let me just start by saying to you that in the last couple of days, there's been an emergence of a number of people going back to a week ago or 2 weeks ago with the Walter Jones, Larry Wilkerson, Jeff Steinberg, Bruce Fein press conference, where people are beginning to say things that you hadn't heard publicly said before. Just in the last 2 days, there's a whole spate of articles. Perhaps one of the most interesting was the one which said that Netanyahu is unfit to be prime minister. But let me just pose it to you. Are you seeing or getting a whiff of Watergate in the air?
Well, I haven't been on the street in Washington, but what I can tell you is, from the people who have in here in Northern Virginia, is that the more informed people are about what this government and administration are planning and dealing with, the more responsive they are to our organizing. We've had some extraordinary responses from people who won't give us their name, rank, and serial number, as you might say, because they know that what the thrust of this administration is likely to lead us to an absolute catastrophe. And, of course, we have had indications of that from high levels. I think the most extraordinary one was really that Iran study group release, which was done about 2 weeks ago, a group headed by Thomas Pickering, a very long-standing diplomat,
Pickering, by the way, is the same person who was appointed to do the accountability review for the State Department on Benghazi.
Yeah, I think that's a setup, right? Because he's supposed to get that done by next April. So they just thought they'd put somebody respectable there that, and hope that he would cover up as well.
Well, maybe to keep him from talking about what the Iran study group is saying.
Yes, right. So, I mean, this was a group of actually, if people want to get more of a sense of it, they should just go back to the press conference you referred to, of which was just a week ago yesterday, Harley. A lot is jammed into a whole week. The 21st of September, and Wilkerson, Colonel Wilkerson, the former chief of staff to Colin Powell, was also on that group of about 30-35 retired military, intelligence, and diplomatic officials who went through the facts, right? That was their view. Let the facts speak about what the result of an attack on Iran, allegedly to eliminate its nuclear program, would result in. And the picture was absolutely devastating. They made no explicit recommendations, and they simply, but they are campaigning on it. In fact, one of the people who was on that group, a fellow by the name of James Walsh, he's an academic, this week did an op-ed or a speech, which was covered in the paper, that reiterated those points. So they have a campaign, right, to, because they know this is an absolute disaster, and Colonel Wilkerson does elaborate that, and people should pay attention. So
our listeners can go to the LaRouchePAC.com website and watch the press conference for themselves. And I think, Nancy, what I'd like to start with is that this press conference represented a kind of shift in which we were seeing people who previously had been saying these things at think tank meetings and in private discussions made the decision to come out publicly. What does that tell you about how close we are to actually having a war, an Israeli strike on Iran, a U.S. intervention in Syria, or some other escalation?
It absolutely says a lot, and I think that we're going to see a lot more of it. The other level of response that we've seen just in this fact in the last week has been the either leaks in the media or and congressional action, particularly from the Senate, exposing and demanding explanations for the lies from the administration on the Benghazi attack itself. I mean, there's just an incredible number of elements of how this was permitted that have come out.
Let's just go through that, because I think that, I mean, what Mr. LaRouche said the other day is facts, facts, facts. Let's get these facts out. As you just said, let the facts march out on the stage of history. Why don't you just take us through what has emerged and the extent of the cover-up and then the reaction to that?
Right. Well, this won't necessarily be in any order, any chronological order, but it's overwhelming. First, and some of these things are in the latest LaRouchePAC leaflet, which has been circulating heavily in Washington over this weekend around the country, and people can also find on the website, but not all of it. So there was a travel warning on August 27th against going to the Benghazi area of Libya because of terror threats. Just yesterday, we learned from a senior Pentagon source that the White House had actually been briefed on a pending attack on the Benghazi consulate prior to that attack. We have a statement that was issued, a call that was issued by the nominal head of Al-Qaeda, the Saudi-British terror arm, Saudi monarchy British terror arm, Zawahiri, who released a video calling for revenge attacks for the death of one of his associates who was Libyan, particularly in Libya. We have the release of quotes from Ambassador Stevens' diaries, where he said that he was on an Al-Qaeda hit list he feared for his safety. This was found after he was killed. Then we have the absolute, we have multiple testimony now admitted to by the administration that the line that this whole thing was, the assassinations and killings were the result of a demonstration that got out of control, has entirely been discredited by eyewitnesses who said there was no demonstration. In fact, there was no security. There was a waiver given to the security force there to be unarmed. The security had been outsourced to a British security firm, so-called in quotes, Blue Mountain Group, which had never been vetted prior to its hiring officially in May of this year. This is a group that we have, from what we've learned so far, and we can by no means know everything about this group. We do know that they brag about their close connection with British military intelligence, SAS, Strategic Something Services, and they very high level intelligence. Not operation military intelligence, I believe, in Great Britain. So they are a spin-off of that, privatized of that, and have entered Libya, according to reports garnered so far, very soon after Gaddafi's murder.
Nancy, I just think two points I think that should be brought up is that when you talk about the security situation in Benghazi, from what I understand, it's still so dangerous that the FBI has had trouble getting to the crime scene to do their investigation. Secondly, I think it's very significant that CNN, of all places, were the ones who got a hold of the Stevens written notes on his own fears. And they, for whatever reason, they've been covering the fact that the administration has been lying about the security situation there.
It is quite notable that media who have been slavish in support of Obama have not been able to continue that profile in the recent period, even on National Public Radio, right? You now hear features about what has been covered up. You hear the story that the Senate has demanded the release of all communications in light of those, that CNN release of Stevens's personal notes about being threatened. They've demanded that copies of communications from Stevens and that Benghazi region to Washington over the course of the immediate period before the events be released. So these things are coming out because, in fact, I believe that there has been no ambassador of the United States killed since for 35 years or something of that sort. Obama gets out there and talks about bumps in a row in the road, you know, on our path to what he can, what he tries to sell as a recovery. The fact is that the policy from the very beginning of the Obama administration to carry out regime change, which predictably, knowingly would lead to the resurgence of these kinds of terrorist groups, is obvious to many, many people, and they are now they're beginning to see they tolerated it. I mean, in fact, I mean, one of the things that's in the latest, I mean, you really have to plug the magazine to a certain degree. The last two magazines are chock full of documentation on this question of what the administration has been covering up. But one of them in the last issue comes from the record of Hillary Clinton. I mean, as recently as 2009, Hillary Clinton was out there talking about how the Saudi monarchy has been a main supporter of the global jihadi terror. There's apparently a very widely watched video on YouTube to this effect. On April 23rd, 2009, in testimony before a House Appropriations Subcommittee, Clinton acknowledged the Saudi role in creating Al-Qaeda, and said basically the same kind of thing that applies to what's going on in Libya. And if Obama is not stopped, is not removed, it will happen in Syria with
Well,
even.
that's the most obvious incongruity. If you would assume that these people were honest, they could look at what happened in Libya and who they armed, because some of the people who were armed, the so-called militias, were the ones that most likely assassinated our ambassador. And yet they're still in front of the United Nations, still pushing for arming the same groups, including Libyan Al-Qaeda, which has been identified as a central part of this Syrian operation. I want to get to the Saudi question in a couple of minutes, but I want you to just keep going with some of these facts on the cover-up around the Benghazi event and the implications of it for the possibility that Obama not only is in trouble, but still could be removed before we get to the election.
Right. The other facts that I have noted out here on top of what I've already said, we do have the London Independent with its correspondents on the ground indicating that there was a 48-hour warning prior to the attack. This may be the same thing as that latest attack that we were told, I mean, warning that we were told about by the senior Pentagon source. We don't, you don't know. But it's another source out there. It's obviously not the same source. And then you have the most credibly, I believe, the president of Libya himself, who has gone on every media that will listen to him. Unfortunately, he did not have the nerve to say this in his speech at the United Nations this week. Probably he was read the Riot Act as to why he better not. But he specifically saying, yes, this was pre-planned terror. These terrorists came, he says they came into the country 3 weeks ago or so, prior to the hit. That's a partial story because we know that Benghazi has been for decades a center of the recruitment for, or the Benghazi area, that area of Libya, a center for recruitment for Al-Qaeda. In fact, I think that one of the towns very near Benghazi is the place from which the most suicide bombers in the world from Al-Qaeda have volunteered, so to speak. So this is, I think that pretty much does the particular facts, I mean, which totally were contradicted, particularly the demonstration question, which has been wiped out, in terms of the lie by Susan Rice going all over the place, saying that this was caused by the demonstration. It continues to be a line from the president, from Hillary Clinton, coming out attacking this, crazy film as if it were the cause. Total
Well,
lunacy.
Susan Rice has a lot to cover up on this because she's one of the people who is most responsible for the adoption of the responsibility to protect nonsense, which is the pretext, the so-called human rights pretext for the U.S. intervention in Libya and now into Syria.
Right. So, I mean, the other thing that it's a little bit of a sidelight, but I think it's important to say for those who are watching this in some kind of listening to us with some kind of detail, it's important to understand that the kind of twist that some people are putting on the identification of Al-Qaeda in the attack. I mean, Al-Qaeda is many things, has many shades, and so forth and so on. They clearly were involved in those kinds of groups were clearly involved in this attack. But if you look at what Hillary Clinton said at the United Nations in her private meeting on North African security a couple days ago, the way she put it is, in effect, to target for the next intervention as opposed to dealing with the mistake of supporting these groups. She said, oh yes, these groups came in from northern Mali and took care of and carried out this atrocity and were involved in this atrocity, and we've got to deal with that crisis in Mali. Now, precisely the opposite is true. The fact is that Mali is a total mess at this point. Its government was deposed because terrorists who were given free rein in Libya by the British, French, Obama administration invasion are the ones who spilled over into northern Mali to create the destabilization there. So one has to watch out that even when so-called coming clean, right, there are those who will try to spin the situation in order to provoke the next military intervention, because what the name of the game from the British monarchy is maximum chaos. This is why Lyndon LaRouche called it 9/11, a globally extended 9/11. You're looking at a process of accelerating the uprisings among irate Muslims, which are instigated and steered and paid for by the Saudis in large part, although obviously people fall for this stuff. And you're seeing, so that is creates a chaotic situation globally. And then you're seeing, on the other hand, a promotion of these regime change policies, which are strictly aimed at eliminating the principle of national sovereignty and therefore bringing us right up against the and toward confrontation, which can only be thermonuclear, with Russia and China.
Well, and this is an imperial doctrine, and there's a consistency in the Obama administration on this, in that we already have troops on the ground now in various other parts of Africa. And so we're seeing a U.S. military that's been tied up in long wars in Afghanistan and Iraq, that's had a depleted personnel. We have a bank, or not a bankrupt, but a very difficult situation with the budget for even sustaining the military. And here's Obama deploying the military into new situations and new destabilizations. Let me just remind our listeners, you're listening to The LaRouche Show. It's September 29th, 2012. My guest is Nancy Spanis, and we're discussing the possibility that Obama can be removed based on the unconstitutional policy of these wars that he's promoting. We could take the rest of the hour to go through the list of impeachable crimes, but we're actually looking at a situation where opposition is emerging and emerging publicly. Now, Nancy, you mentioned this globally extended 9/11. Mr. LaRouche referred to the Benghazi attack as 9/11-2, and there's an implication to this that goes beyond just the fact that it occurred on the same date, which is that we've seen a continuity of an operation going back to September 11th, 2001, in terms of the Anglo-Saudi side of this. So let's get into that a little bit, because that was also that's a prominent feature of the so-called war on terror that we're in.
Before we do that, Harley, why don't I just go through the late breaking story from yesterday on the Nixon parallel here?
Yes, absolutely.
Because I didn't really address that, and this is now getting more publicity. Of course, the aura of Watergate in terms of cover-up by the Obama administration has been growing over the whole course of the summer. This particularly has happened around the Fast and Furious investigation with the actual invoking of executive privilege, I'm releasing documents and so forth and so on. It has created a kind of aura of Watergate, accusations that that Obama has an enemies list and so forth and so on. Now, which is all to say, as LaRouche said at the time, it's the parallel is not so much even what the two presidents were up to, although Nixon certainly wanted to have an imperial presidency. Obama has been a lot more successful in running over the Congress and or the cowardly Congress and imposing such an imperial presidency. But this now with the new cover-up on something so vital as the fact that we allowed through negligence, complicity, and other aspects, allowed an ambassador and at least three other officials of the United States to be killed, or Obama allowed it, that has re-raised this. And I just want people to note, this is not the highest level person in the world, but it reflects an environment as well. Former Arkansas Governor Mike Huckabee, also a former Republican presidential candidate who did quite well in the 2008, as I recall, gave an interview to Fox News last night, and he said that the White House has to explain why it hasn't owned up to the fact that this was a terrorist attack and not attributable to something about some stupid movie. He said, we've been lied to. It's as if they knew they lied. It's as if airplanes crashing into the World Trade Center and somebody says, those were just accidents. The planes veered off course. Everybody with two eyes and IQ above plant life understands that what happened in Egypt and what happened in Libya are not the same spontaneous reaction to a stupid 13-minute video on YouTube. The White House has to explain, said, and I think, frankly, if this issue really gets the traction that it deserves, and let me say that it deserves it, let's go back. Richard Nixon was forced out of office because he lied and because he covered some stuff up. I'm going to be blunt and tell you this. Nobody died in Watergate. We have some people who are dead because of this, and there's some questions to be answered, and Americans ought to demand to get answers. It's a pretty good clarion call, and we do see it as, while it's not complete, it comes in the context of the fact that we have, not only in the streets, this is we, LaRouche Pack, not only in the streets, but in every level of organizing, including political layers, military intelligence layers, and so forth, have been hammering on this issue. And for many people whom we've been talking to for years about the threat of Obama remaining in the presidency, this has reached a final straw.
Well, and I think the Watergate implication is important for another reason, which is if you look at how the Democrats protected George Bush Jr., and despite his lying to launch the Iraq War initially with weapons of mass destruction, and he set in motion many of these dictatorial imperial policies that Obama has embraced and extended, Democrats, Pelosi said impeachment is off the table. And we've seen the same thing now with Republicans who have, until this development with Huckabee, Rudy Giuliani was talking about cover up, the Watergate implications. We're now beginning to see that come out. I think one of the problems is that the Republicans who went headlong into trying to impeach Bill Clinton over something that was a relatively trivial incident is partly to blame for the fact that people are afraid to allow principle to come back in the policy because they don't want to make this impeachment issue something that's important. But you know, the question of that LaRouche posed initially was, given the problems with impeachment, what about the 25th Amendment to the Constitution? And clearly what we're seeing in Obama, and I just want to bring this up as a maybe a final point on the Benghazi incident, is that the White House was briefed as the consulate was under attack, and yet Obama continued to go on with business as usual. He did a fundraiser in Las Vegas, and no decision was made. In fact, the initial point that I think I heard was that the administration did not want to infringe on Libyan sovereignty by sending in Marines or anyone else to protect the consulate. We didn't seem to care too much about Libyan sovereignty when we launched the no-fly zone. So again, I think the question of the corruption and the immorality of this administration bears much, much more immediate scrutiny from Democrats and Republicans.
Right. And just to emphasize on the impeachment point, which is something that I always want to emphasize, is that impeachment, you know, despite the fact that we talk with good reason about criminal activity on the part of this president, impeachment is not an indictment for a crime. Impeachment is a precursor to an indictment for a crime. It's for offense against the Constitution because a president or other official represents a clear and present danger to the welfare of the country, right? And right. You've got to look at this, as LaRouche is fond of saying, from the future, right? What he represents as a threat to the very survival of the country if he continues to violate the Constitution in this way. This is, and again, I would mention the situation in Syria from this standpoint, as you elaborated also, the support for the same forces that carried out this atrocity in Benghazi continues in the forum of Syria. And not only that, the removal of the terrorist label from the MEK in Iran, which has also been a factor in really alarming a number of military intelligence people who thought that they could just tough it out with Obama, now saying, my God, what is this guy capable of doing against the interests of the United States to provoke us into a war that could actually blow us up? And they don't say it so bluntly, but that's precisely why they are feeling more bravery to come forward in the way that they have.
Well, and this has been the point from Lyndon LaRouche, who doesn't take such matters such as impeachment as trivial, but you are talking about the, as we have done repeatedly on the website and in the Executive Intelligence Review, we're talking about actions which have consequences of extraordinary proportion. I mean, the possibility that's been openly discussed by the Russians of a possible confrontation with nuclear weapons over the deployments of the anti-ballistic missile systems, the infringement on sovereignty. We just saw this last week, Russian Foreign Minister Lavrov making a very strong statement on Charlie Rose's show, where Charlie Rose said, "Are you afraid of the Arab Spring?" And he said, "Well, it's turning into the Arab Fall." And then I believe he said something like, "And let's hope it doesn't turn into nuclear winter."
Right.
Or something along those lines. You also had a very interesting comment from President Putin of Russia yesterday, talking about regime change as the policy that was the forerunner to the Roman Empire, the Roman attack on and destruction of Carthage. And I think these are very clear statements that are not getting into the U.S. press except from what we're doing. But the Joint Chiefs of Staff are aware of this, General Dempsey. People in the intelligence community are aware of what the Russians are saying and of the dangers of war. And I think it also should be added that I'm assuming there are many people in the diplomatic corps, both active duty now and former, who are looking at how Ambassador Stevens' life was essentially treated so cavalierly, that are wondering if they can survive this administration. So I think this brings us again to the broader question of what's behind this. Why is the president doing this, and how does this relate to the deployment, which actually we can say September 11, 2001, but really goes back to Bush Sr. and the launching of the Saudi, U.S., British, Afghan Mujahideen against the Soviet Union, but how that created al-Qaeda.
Well, I can't go through the history of the creation of al-Qaeda. For that, I would have to refer people to the excellent archive on the LaRouche Pub site. Though we are bringing up certain aspects of that which are relevant in the course of the current situation in our weekly coverage. And just this week, we have an extensive article by Ramtanu Maitra, who knows from the Indian subcontinent example in particular, the threat which this kind of terrorist support from what we call Londonistan, London, the London being the center of these jihadi groups, really, you know, represents as a threat to sovereign nations, as that has been an MO going on in against India for many, many, many decades, if not century. So, but the Saudi, but it's well known in the U.S. intelligence community that the Saudis are the chief funders and creators of terror. I was saying before, the, when we went back onto the Benghazi question for a bit, Secretary of State Hillary Clinton testimony in 2009 saying, remember the people we're fighting today, meaning the people in Afghanistan and so forth, we funded 20 years ago, and we did it because we were locked in a struggle with the Soviet Union. Now, that's not totally accurate, but that's what she's saying. And so she's saying, we brought these people, she doesn't say along with the British, but that's true, into a position of increasing capability, and now they're turning against us. Putin made the same, has made the same point. In fact, one of his spokesmen just about 2 weeks ago, in commenting on what happened in Benghazi, said, this is a limited view, but it has a certain element of truth, that what the U.S. has been doing is thinking it can use these groups, right, is what the Soviets tried to do in Afghanistan, and see what happened to them. So, right. With a certain amount of schadenfreude, of course, but that is, that has some truth to it. Then also from Clinton, Hillary Clinton, she knows better, right? December 30th, 2009, a State Department cable in which the, excuse me, this is from State Department officials, saying that the task force which Clinton had set up, headed by Richard Holbrooke, on the illicit finances of terrorism had come straight to the question of Saudi Arabia. This is what they claimed is, while the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia takes seriously the threat of terrorism within Saudi Arabia, it's been an ongoing challenge to persuade them to prevent terrorism outside Saudi Arabia.
Right.
More needs to be done since Saudi Arabia remains a critical financial support base for al-Qaeda, the Taliban, LET, and other terrorist groups. So this is quite, it's on the books, right? It's well known. It's
And also the other part of the EIR coverage that I just want to refer back to, you mentioned the LaRouche Pub site. That's the site where you can go find the articles in Executive Intelligence Review. But we are the probably the leading experts on the role of Prince Bandar, the close friend of George W. Bush, the former ambassador from Saudi Arabia to the United States, now the head of Saudi intelligence. So he's in the Saudi government coordinating these actions. We have extensive evidence, which includes work done by the Senate Intelligence Committee under former Senator Bob Graham, who's brought this up again recently, that shows the Saudi role in 9/11. And we've taken that back to the operation of BAE, the British defense contractors, and their relationship with the Saudis providing a slush fund that's been used to fund these operations.
Right. Yes, that's the other point on the Saudis, which has very much come to the fore, as you say. Former Senator Graham is really attempting to put a fire under this administration on the question of the Saudi role in 9/11, which has been totally covered up by the official inquiry. 28 relevant pages have been classified. Obama had promised to unclassify them. He has not. In fact, he has had his Solicitor General go to court to defend the Saudi monarchy in suits by families for their involvement in the terror. And Senator Graham himself has utilized investigative journalists and other sources to discover a whole other range of direct Saudi support for the terrorists of 9/11 down in Florida, in addition to those whom we know were identified in those 28 pages from San Diego, where there's been involvement in both cases with the FBI, where there's the money trail can be followed to directly, in some cases, to Prince Bandar, in other cases, just to the Saudis per se. And I believe that if you should read Jeffrey Steinberg's review of Bob's Graham's book, that's in the September 21st edition of EIR. But the result so far that Senator Graham has put out on his conclusions is that Saudi money was directly, traceably involved in funding at least 11 of the hijackers from September 11th, 2001. And Senator Graham's point is quite direct. This is not academic. This is not a question of digging up history, as is even further underscored by the Benghazi event. This is a quest. This network has never been rolled up. This network is active now.
You see, Nancy, this is where I think what we see with Mike Huckabee was, while it's good, it hasn't yet reached the level of urgency, because there are American diplomatic missions around the world that are threatened by these forces. These are the forces that are being used even more than just for assaults on American embassies and consulates and American business interests. These are the networks which are generating the spark that could ignite a nuclear World War III. And up to this point, the cover-up has remained in place. And in fact, under President Obama, the latest coming out from the ACLU investigation into the anti-whistleblower mentality of this administration is they could threaten anyone who would try to reveal this information with the death penalty. I mean, it's that extreme what this administration is doing to allow these kinds of policies to continue.
Right. No, it is a clear and present danger. There are two areas in which you can see that. And you can't rule out either one of them kicking off in the very short term. I don't actually have a reading on what the happened globally from the Friday prayers yesterday. So I don't know if through whatever means the uproars and were contained or died down for on a momentary basis. But there's no reason to believe that they can't be revved up very easily. For example, if The president does what is his wont, which is to send some drone strikes against the alleged perpetrators of this murder, which ends up creating a massive explosion by the fact that it kills a whole lot of innocent people. But there are two areas where this is really a danger prior to the election. It's crazy to say that we can deal with this, by voting this guy out. In fact, we've picked up in the organizing here in the street that a lot of Republicans are beginning to understand that too, because Romney seems to be winning the race to the bottom in many.
Well, and that's just I think it's worth noting that Romney's foreign policy advisors are the same people who brought us the weapons of mass destruction in Iraq,
Right.
and that Romney is even more open in his support of Netanyahu than Obama. And I'd like to, just because we're running a little short on time, I'd like to get to these developments now on this Iran question, because we saw this week Netanyahu before the United Nations essentially doing a geek act on, we've got to draw a red line, we've got to be prepared for war. And it led to this buildup toward war with Iran led to a very interesting article in Haaretz by a prominent Israeli author who basically said what needs to be said, that Netanyahu is not fit for office. Because his actions, if he were to launch a strike, which many people think is imminent, a strike against Iran, it would lead to the destruction of Israel, as well as the possibility of a global thermonuclear war. So I'd like you to just bring that into this, because the role of Obama on this is much more covered up in the media, but it's clear that the Israelis are, if they're not being given a green light, they're certainly not being told not to, except by the U.S. military.
Right. I think the relevance picture here is the following. I mean, our best testimony comes from our inside military intelligence sources here and the rather open statements by many people in Israel who are a lot more brave than I guess I think probably you've said this too, Harley. It's possible to criticize Israel much more in the Knesset than it is in the U.S. Congress. So you do get that kind of expression of freedom of attack on the insanity of the war policy much more in Israel. Which has explicit military censorship in its press, as opposed to the implicit censorship which we have here. But the testimony from our inside sources here is that Obama is in effect telling Netanyahu that he is cut loose and can go ahead. And no, he is not being told not to carry out a strike
Right.
during the election. In fact, there have been some Israelis who come out and say that Obama would prefer it occur before the election because then he could come to the support of Israel and show he's more pro-Israel than Romney, or at least that, Romney can't attack him on that. But I think that, and I think the fact that Obama has signed off on this MEK decision is also very relevant to this war, the actual intention to move to war against Iran.
Because of the connection between MEK and Israelis in terms of
Yeah, the
the
MEK is
connection by
widely
Iran.
ex expect thought to be the people on the ground that have carried out the assassination of the
Right.
scientists, for example.
Right.
Basically Israeli agents. So the clear intention of is there, and all the negotiation and so forth and so on, because it's combined with virtual acts of war, I mean actual acts of war against Iran, including trying to starve them to death economically with the sanctions. I mean, that's what the Russians keep saying. That's what Lavrov said this week on that same Charlie Rose show. He said, you know, you insist on having a policy to bludgeon Iran into an agreement. You know, that is counterproductive. And in fact, it's not just counterproductive, it's leading toward an actual blow up of war. So it's not unintentional, just as it wasn't unintentional in the buildup prior to, you know, over the last entire administration of Obama. So the fact is that Obama is basically carrying out a policy defined by the British Empire that says we are going to suppress any resistance to our global financial dictatorship, which we know and we are happy will lead to massive depopulation on a world scale, but that's too bad, and we are going to crush any forces who are actually going to resist this. The only significant forces globally, of course, are Russia and China, the other thermonuclear powers on this planet. And therefore, these moves, you know, the posture of this administration, which has to be understood as by looking at it as it not only at the British intention as stated, but the activity of this administration all the way through has been to follow the line of eliminate national sovereignty in the interest of our global governance. And the Russians keep saying that's intolerable, you're violating the United Nations rules of international law. The administration, Susan Rice the most wild, says, yeah, so what of it? You know, we have a higher law. And the same situation with Iran, in fact. They say, what's the use of collaborating with the IAEA if you just turn around and change the rules the next time we go around? So the intention is clearly that we define the rules and national sovereignty will not be allowed to be maintained as the bulwark of international relations. And that is going to bring us through any kind of, it can happen in any, if it's not changed, if we don't remove the guy who is moving in that direction and accreting the power to actually act on that. I mean, he has the power the only power on earth to create a thermonuclear confrontation. The Russians and Chinese are on the defensive, so to speak, on this. The Obama administration, with the only global power to carry out that destruction, is on the offensive as effectively a tool of the British imperial intention.
Well, Nancy, in the remaining minutes, given this whole picture, there is what we started with was the emergence of an opposition, a vocal opposition, which is spearheaded by the recent deployments of LaRouche PAC into the Congress, the deployment of leaflets. So give our listeners some marching orders. And what must we do in the days ahead? Because we're now under 40 days to the election. And this train wreck of Obama versus Romney is a threat to the nation.
Right. You mean besides subscribe to the EIR?
Yes, besides that. That's obviously a point. The Executive Intelligence Weekly is available for subscription, and I think our listeners who do not have it ought to be on it, because in addition to what we have with LaRouche PAC, we do have in-depth articles, including the articles of Mr. LaRouche, the strategic articles and philosophical scientific articles. But go ahead.
Yeah. Well, we have to, as a nation, move to, through the whatever instrumentality we have, to get Obama out of the power that he has to destroy the world. The easiest, the way most obvious for us right now is to press on his impeachable crimes. They're known. The only reason people don't do it is they say it's impractical. What Congress is on adjournment, it's not on recess. It can be brought into, even if it were on recess, it could be brought into session at any point by the leadership of the Congress if they're under enough pressure and see a national emergency. This is a national emergency where you have a presidency which is acting in complicity with the British and Saudi monarchy in a way that represents a clear and present danger, not only for the destruction that has happened, but that could happen. So everybody has to act on the first, face that reality, face the fact of what's going on, and then get their congressmen, social groups, whatever, to demand that Congress come back into session and take action against Obama, get an impeachment proceeding beginning in whatever way. It could be through HCR 107, Walter Jones's bill, the concurrent resolution that says if he would go to war, he would be immediately impeached. Not that we would wait for that, but that's a shot across the bow. It's a first step. Get at the same time, press for what immediately should happen on the policy front as an alternative to Obama, which would be the immediate passage of Glass-Steagall. It was pointed out to me this week that it's wrong to say we have only 82 co-sponsors on Glass-Steagall. That's probably the most co-sponsors on virtually any bill except a Ron Paul bill to get an audit of the Fed. It's massive. That has to be turned into action now. I mean, they said, look at what happened in overturning the bringing down the Berlin Wall. It was not scheduled, right? No one put it on an election schedule. It happened because people acted, and that's what the mentality people have to act before the election, now in the next days, because there is an imminent danger of Obama doing something nuts that would provoke World War III.
And I think we're just about out of time. I think the important thing is that what's on the agenda now is the removal of Obama. It's becoming more possible for people to speak of these things, and they have to. We have to put the pressure on the Congress and also on our listeners. You cannot sit back and say, it never happened, I don't believe it. So Nancy, thanks for joining us today. This has been another edition of the LaRouche Show. We'll be back next Saturday at 3 p.m. Eastern. And Nancy, thank you very much.
You're welcome.